They have agreed to convene a meeting of their high-level staff next week to continue these very important discussions, which may be followed by yet another meeting between President Trump and President Putin.
President Trump writes, I have just concluded my telephone conversation with President Vladimir Putin of Russia, and it was a very productive one. President Putin congratulated me and the United States on the great accomplishments of peace in the Middle East, something that he said he has dreamed of for centuries. I'm not sure how he's been dreaming for centuries, but we'll leave that as it was. I actually believe that the success in the Middle East will help our negotiations in attaining an end to the war with Russia and Ukraine. President Putin thanked the First Lady Melania for her involvement with children. He was very appreciative and said that he will continue. We also spent a great deal of time talking about trade between Russia and the United States when the war is over. That's another common thing that Putin always goes back to. At the conclusion of the call, we agreed that there will be a meeting of our high-level advisors next week. The United States' initial meetings will be led by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, together with various other people to be designated. A meeting location to be determined. President Putin and I will then be agreed upon the location, Budapest, Hungary. Interesting location there. I think it's a good one. To see if we can bring this inglorious war between Russia and Ukraine to an end. President Zelensky and I will be meeting tomorrow in the Oval Office, where we will discuss my conversation with Putin and much more. I believe great progress was made with today's phone call and conversation. Okay, if you just looked at that as at face value as it was, then you would think that's awesome. That's good, because President Trump, President Putin got on the phone. They said, hey, we want to bring this thing to an end. Let's get our high-level people. This is the way it's supposed to work. Let's get our high-level people together to talk first and see if we can hammer out something and get close to whatever we would agree on. And then the next visit would be between us, and then we would hammer out some kind of end to this inglorious war, it says. But you can't take it in isolation, because it exists in the panoply of all of these other things that are swirling around, many of which were said just yesterday, many of it are roiling around in Europe yesterday and today even. And this also has to be taken in context with the Alaska meeting. Remember, at the end of that meeting, President Trump said he was really optimistic and hopeful that we would get to an end to the war in that case. And then you may recall right after it, he said that, yeah, we're going to have a bilateral meeting between Russia and between Putin and Zelensky, and then probably a trilateral later on in the month of August, he said. And then that way we'll bring the whole thing to an end. They want me there, he said, because I can help bring it to an end. Nothing happened after that. Russia ended up saying, we haven't changed our position. We're saying the same thing we've always said. All of our conditions have to be met. Putin subsequently said, we're either going to solve this at the negotiating table or we're going to solve it on the battlefield. He's never said anything besides that. And so now, in the context of this one, even in the near term, this was being pitched because President Trump, in another Truth Social about 10 or so days ago, Russia's a paper tiger. And as it turns out, Ukraine can drive and go all the way back to the 1991 borders, and who knows, maybe even beyond that, so he said. And then we have, and now in the near term, Trump saying, I might give them Tomahawk missiles. As a matter of fact, if they don't get this thing solved, I'm going to bring some Tomahawks into this equation here. And of course, Zelensky's jumping all over that. He's like, absolutely, yes, that's what we need. We need more sanctions, and we need more long-range fires, specifically Tomahawks. And so he's got his team here. Gary showed yesterday all those videos and photographs of Zelensky's team meeting with Raytheon and a lot of other defense contractors. Everybody thumbs up, big smiles on their face, because they were all happy about making economic deals and buying all these long-range weapons and air defense interceptors, all kinds of stuff. And now Zelensky, with his team here and ready to come tomorrow, he's thinking he's going to get authorization to use Tomahawks against Russia. And then Trump kind of upends the whole thing and says, a lot of progress was going to be made. He said absolutely nothing in this conversation about Tomahawk missiles. He didn't say anything about putting pressure on Russia. He just says, hey, we're going to have a talk next week, and I think we can bring it to an end. No clue about what that means or how he's talking about doing it. And if history is any guide, it's pretty unlikely that Russia agreed on this phone call to submit to Trump's terms. it's pretty unlikely that he's going to say, all right, we'll change everything we've been saying. Well, I don't know, go back to February of 2022 or April of 2022 in Istanbul. Probably not the case. And for sure, it's virtually unthinkable that it wasn't, that the Tomahawk issue was on the table when they had their phone call. So Trump has made this threat. We've shown you earlier in the show today and yesterday that the Russians were not happy about this. I think we showed you earlier the British, the Russian ambassador to Britain was on television this morning saying that there would be consequences if that happened. He refused to say what those were, but he said it would be a definite escalation. His arm did that. I mean, he didn't say it would be up. I mean, he physically moved his hand way up there to indicate it would be a significant escalation. So for sure, that was on the agenda here. We'll be waiting real eager to see what the Russian readout of this is. Well, if we get anything on the air before we get off, we'll certainly bring that to you. But I can't imagine that Russia is going to have changed. So if they didn't, then the question is, upon what basis will this meeting have that they're going to bring to an end? What has changed? Something has to change because the two sides have been on polar opposites, and they've been that way for a long time. Nothing happened to narrow the gap after Alaska, and certainly nothing in the interim time and or recent times has done anything but expand the difference between the two sides. So what is giving him optimism right now? That's the million-dollar question that we'd really like an answer to. And we're not going to get that in the moment here. So the only thing we can do is see what led up to this moment. How did we get here today? And I'm talking about just in the last 24 to 36 hours. A lot of things have been said, and you have to view everything I just read there in the context of the last bit of time here, because those things all coexist. We got to try to make some sense of it. Well, let's go first of all to this issue of where yesterday President Trump was convinced that he had the leverage and the pressure points to actually bring Russia to heel by putting pressure on India.
There will be no oil. He's not buying his oil from Russia. It started. You know, he can't do it immediately. It's a little bit of a process. But the process is going to be over with soon. And all we want from President Putin is stop this. Stop killing Ukrainians and stop killing Russians, because he's killing a lot of Russians. Again, it doesn't make him look good. It's a war that he should have won in 1 week, and he's now going into his fourth year. That does not make this big so-called war machine look good. But he could make a settlement. We're willing to settle. I thought we had a deal. The hatred of the two leaders is very, you know, it's an obstacle. It's an obstacle. There's no question about it. But I thought we had a deal 2 months ago. Who would think I created peace in the Middle East and can't get the two guys to settle? But I think we'll get them. But if India doesn't buy oil, it makes it much easier.
So, lot to unpack there. Well, let's start off with some of the videos. He said, listen, all I'm asking Russia to do is just stop killing people. So, not that I'm looking at any of the reasons why Russia said that they went to war, and what they said the conditions are absolutely essential and required to bring it to an end. No discussion about that at all. No acknowledgement that that even exists. Just stop killing. Like Trump seems to think that all we have to do is get Zelensky and Putin to say, all right, war's over. That's it. Wherever the line of contact is now, that's where it's going to stop. So we just want to stop the killing. That solves absolutely nothing, and it satisfies neither one of them. There's no way Zelensky would ever be satisfied with that himself, and there's no way that Russia would ever be satisfied. Both of them have unequivocally said that Zelensky said that we will never give away our territory. We're not going to sign anything away. He only said that the current line of contact would begin conversations, and he has in recent days said, no, we want to continue fighting. That's all they are interested in. It's all the European side are interested in, helping continue fighting the war. And then now Trump is forgetting about what exists on the Russian side and what they say that they need, or how just stopping the killing would satisfy anyone in Russia that would lead to a sustainable end of hostilities. Because in order to have this more than just a ceasefire, in order to have it to where the war comes to an end, you have to address the fundamentals. And that means primarily one of two things. Either both sides have to say, all right, here is the minimum that I can live with. And if these conditions are met, then I can at least live with this. We can stop the war and there doesn't need to be another one. I can't even imagine any circumstances where those there any set of circumstances exist that both sides would be acknowledged. They would be willing to accept. Maybe it exists. I can't imagine it. That's one method, though. But if you don't have that, then the war can't come to an end that way through an agreed upon, just negotiated settlement. The other way is that one side does one of two things there. Either, and of course, this is only the Russian side, either they say, here are my conditions, and because I'm in the position of superiority and power, that I will give on this tiny one and this tiny one, and you'll give on this basket load over here. And if you give on the basket load, then we have an end to the conflict. And if the weaker side, the Ukraine side, says, I'll just have to hold my nose and live with it, and sure, we'll go along with that. That can also end it. Or the alternative way on number two is that Russia just wins the war, and that Russia just continues grinding down the Ukraine military until it's not able to offer resistance, whether that's another 3 or 4 months and the military falls apart, or whether they continue doing like the Germans did in World War II, then they stay and they fight to the bitter end, and it could be a year, 2 years more. In fact, it could possibly be that way. Russia can do that because they have the wherewithal, they have the military infrastructure, they have the defense industrial base, they have the manpower. They have everything that you need to do that. Even if it took that much time, they can do it. The Ukraine side can't. The Ukraine side can't get into a war of attrition and win. They just don't have the inputs in any category. So what then is the basis for President Trump saying he's going to bring this war to an end, and he's optimistic now? What changed between yesterday and today? Now, one of the things he mentioned in that clip there was, I'm going to bring pressure on India and put them pressure to stop. And he claimed that he talked to Modi and he agreed to it. But when you talk just hours ago, today, the Indians are singing a different tune.
I'm not aware of any conversation yesterday between the two leaders. We have noticed the latest sanctions announced by the UK, as I have said this earlier as well, and possibly most of you are aware of it as well, that we do not subscribe to any unilateral sanctions. Government of India considers the provision of energy security a responsibility of paramount importance to meet the basic needs of its citizens. Indian companies source energy supplies from around the world while taking overall market conditions into account.
So India is saying, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. There was no phone call, and we're going to do what makes sense for us in our economic security, our national security. And I can't think of any scenario where India would say, okay, you know what? Sure. We're going to abandon Russia. We're just going to leave them behind. We're going to cut off. I want to say it's like 40% of their petroleum products come from Russia. And we're just going to stop that, right? We're just going to quit it. Whether fast or slow, what are you going to replace it with? Where are you going to get 40% of your global energy inputs elsewhere? And as the Indians said also, and I think this was yesterday when this comment was first made, India said, look, what are you even talking about? It was the United States under the Biden administration that asked us to do this so that the global price of oil would not blow up back when all this stuff happened earlier in the war. They said, we're just doing what you ask us to do. And now all of a sudden you're putting the screws on us to tell us to do the opposite. But they can't, because now then you see they're buying this 40%. It's not even a matter of can you get 40% elsewhere. That would be really challenging for the global supply. Right now, it's in relative equilibrium between supply and demand. And if you now stop taking from one source 40%, then where else are you going to get it? Because the other sources are going somewhere else. It's a zero-sum situation. If they're going to now all of a sudden all the other global suppliers are going to start giving you that map, making up that 40%, it's got to come from somewhere. So somebody who's buying it right now won't be able to. And then what is that going to leave? They're going to have to get it from Russia somewhere else. You can't take that much petroleum off the market and it not have an effect everywhere else. And even if that could somehow be found, then the price for India for that, because they get all this 40% at a discounted rate, a significant discounted rate. Now you're going to be asking them to get the same percent somewhere else and at market rates. And that means that all of their economic activity and production will now come at a much higher cost, which will have a significant downward effect on their economy not something most politicians are eager to get done for no benefit to themselves, just to make the president of the United States happy. So that seems pretty unlikely it's going to happen. So if people are going to be saying, and I can see some people doing it, saying, oh, it was President Trump's threat of Tomahawk missiles and the threat that China or India was going to stop buying Russian oil, and that is what caused Putin to come to the table and meet here. I'm sure people are going to say that, especially those who supported the president. They'll say his coercive diplomacy worked yet again, and now, great, we have this situation here. I'm not on the inside, so I can't really say for sure on that. But I can tell you, with history as a guide, that's pretty unlikely, and we won't have to wait very long to find out. Whatever happens with these high-level delegations next week, and then whatever is set on the table for the heads of state, assuming that even happens, that's what's going to really tell us. Now, if those meetings come out and it turns out that Russia has backed off of their maximalist demands, and all of a sudden they're not requiring all of this stuff, they're not requiring Ukraine to withdraw out of all of the four administrative borders of the areas that they annexed, if they're not talking about demilitarization, if they're not talking about denazification, then I'm going to have to say, all right, turns out my assessment was wrong. Hats off to President Trump because he figured it out. But I doubt seriously I'll be doing that, but I'm going to go on record to say it. If that happens, then okay. But it seems pretty unlikely to me that that's the case. So I don't think you should be pinning your hopes too much on that. And one who is pinning his hopes on that is Volodymyr Zelensky, who earlier today, in eager anticipation of his meeting tomorrow in the Oval Office with President Trump, said this.
We have also already prepared our part of the homework ahead of the meeting with President Trump, both the military component and the economic one. Every detail, everything is ready. The agenda of our meeting with the President of the United States is very substantive, and I thank everyone who is helping. This can truly bring the war closer to an end. There is a new sanctions package from Britain, there are dozens of people who help Russia fight, and there is also a ship of the Russian fleet carrying oil. We will definitely synchronize this package in our jurisdiction and work so that other partners equally put pressure on Russia for the sake of a real end, an end to the war. Putin should earn less, and then there will be more security in the world. And things like Patriot and Tomahawks can lay a long-term foundation for peace.
So you see that Zelensky is completely devoid of rationality. He's completely talking about what he wants to be true. So he's saying, yes, sanctions, increased sanctions from the UK. And I think there's a 19th package in the European Union that's in process of being developed, et cetera. They want to go after the shadow fleet. They want to curtail Russia's ability to even sell its oil on the international market by any means. And then, of course, the military aspect. He wants more Patriot interceptors, and he wants the long-range stuff, which is the Tomahawks, as he specified there. Those things, he says, will bring peace. Never has he described how that's going to happen. Never has anyone in the Western European side described how that would happen, how more sanctions, when the first 18 packages didn't work, when everything we've tried to do to destroy the Russian economy has not worked. There are some problems with the Russian economy. It is slowed down in its growth. There is an issue with inflation. There's some difficulties. But from Larry Johnson, who was in Moscow yesterday and gave us a firsthand report, we've had conversations earlier today from the Ambassador Ian Proud, or former diplomat Ian Proud, who used to serve in Russia and still has people on the ground and sources in Russia. And he says he's asked. And they said, no, there are some difficulties here and there. There are a few regions where there's been some gasoline rationing, but minor comparatively. And he said, otherwise, the quality of life continues on. There's no suffering. There's certainly no protesting. There's no angry people. So all of that is a myth that's created on our side. And we think that somehow, even though all these other things have failed, maybe next time it's going to work. And so the idea that more sanctions and then now more offensive weapons, and even according to what's being talked about, is possible for the United States to give somewhere around 20 to 50 long-range weapons. That is a drop in the bucket. The idea that that's going to cause Russia material damage, or that's going to change the nature of the war, means that you don't understand how these things work, and you've not been paying any attention to what has been happening on the ground in Ukraine with Russian long-range missiles that there's almost nothing you can do to stop them, the long-range drones that are just crushing your country from left to right, and yet that doesn't knock Ukraine out of the war. And we're not talking 50, folks. We're talking sometimes 50 missiles in a day, and you're talking about hundreds, sometimes up to 600-700 of these long-range drones in a day. And this is now pervasive. There have been literally thousands of missiles, long-range missiles, from the Russian side that have hit plenty of targets and caused substantial damage throughout Ukraine, and it has caused them problems on the front line. It has made life very difficult for them, and it weakens their front, but you see it hasn't collapsed. So by what possible rational logic can you think that a small handful of these missiles is going to bring Russia, the whole of Russia, to its knees when thousands of them haven't brought this much smaller Ukraine to its knees? It's irrational and it's illogical. And yet that's what we're pinning hope on there. And if Zelensky is irrational, you can kind of understand that. It's less understandable, though, why an American retired four-star general also thinks the same.
They're in about a 40-foot shipping container, and the top flips up, and there's four launchers there with four missiles. Pretty, imaginative idea. So that's what's at play here. And what would Ukraine do, to emphasize again to our viewers, they're not going to attack any civilian targets. They're not going to attack a population center like Moscow, the people wringing their hands saying this is an expansion of the war. This is a military escalation, much like we did in the Middle East, to what? To end the war.
Yeah.
The motivation here is not to protract the war, it's to end it.
Yeah, terrific. The idea is to end the war, not to protract it. And how is that going to happen, Jack? How is that supposed to happen? How are 50 freaking missiles, most of which would almost certainly be shot down? Because everybody needs to understand this. Whatever the number is, we are going to give our oldest, least capable stuff first. We are not going to give our high-end, most capable stuff because, number one, we don't want Russia to figure out how to defeat those things in the event that we ever need them. So we're going to use the older stuff, the stuff that Russia knows already and that they have the capacity to shoot down. It's not clear that any of them would get through. Probably some would, but they're not hypersonic missiles, so they can be shot down, and Russia does have the capabilities to do that. So only some small number is going to get through. How then do you argue that that is going to cause Russia to just fold its camp and quit? I mean, there's no rationale to that. I mean, everything we have thrown at Russia militarily, I just mentioned all of the economic instruments. Look at all of the weapon systems, the armaments, the Storm Shadows, the ATACMs, the HIMARS, all of these things that we put out there. Russia figured them all out and neutralized all of them. And even though a lot of them did get through and cause damage, Russia figured it out and they can handle it. They made adjustments like happens all the time in war. It did not stop them. It didn't even prevent them from continuing its offensive. That continues on to this day. So if General Keane is going to say this can change the dynamic, then he has to show, rationally speaking, and say point A, point B, point C equals point D. Point D being Russia folds its arms, folds up its camp, and decides to quit because they calculate that they can't win anymore. What is A, B, and C? Show me how a handful of older Tomahawk missiles, the cruise missiles, how is that most of which won't get through, that are older ones, how are they going to get through? And then whatever they strike, how is that going to change from what Ukraine's already doing? By the way, they've had a number of their own long-range drones and some of these other things that they've developed internally. They get through sometimes. And you've seen all those fires from Bryansk, from several Russian cities, Ingalls Air Base. I mean, these things are getting through there. Has that caused Russia to collapse? Has that caused them to fold up their tents? I mean, it doesn't, and that's already happening. So why do you think that it's going to happen here? What it could do, though, is escalate the situation because, as the Russians have said and pointed out recently, the Tomahawk can be equipped with a nuclear warhead. And are we ready to hope that Russia just says, hope it's not a nuclear bound on this one, because you can't tell. The radar signature is identical. It's a missile. It doesn't know what's inside, what kind of warhead it has. Are we going to bank on that Russia will just assume that it's not and then not take any action, knowing that it literally could end up wiping out command and control center somewhere. That's not something I want to find out. And there's no value to us in doing that, because in the event that it was, then obviously it's thermonuclear war. It's self-destruction for everybody. So I can't imagine that we would do that. But why put Russia in a position to have to respond? Because they could use that as just saying, okay, you want to play that game? Here comes a tactical nuke. The minute that I see that in the air, here comes a tactical nuke in response. I doubt they would do that. I mean, God forbid that they would, and I hope that they don't. But why risk that they might? Because that is a potential response that they could have. The Russian ambassador to the UK earlier today said that he would consider it a significant escalation. He didn't say what it was because he's a diplomat. They don't talk about that stuff, but that's one of the possibilities. Why would we want to find that out? And when you have these guys going on television with this credibility, these four stars on their chest or retired and all the medals that they had and the credibility that we ascribe to them, even though they rarely earn it, why do you want to listen to these guys when they don't even tell you how it's going to work? They just say, yeah, it's magic. It's going to work. That works on TV. That works for a lot of the audience who has no idea. And they're understandably, they're moved by somebody who is a retired four-star general. So they listen to that. The Russians don't. They're not stupid. Vladimir Putin definitely is not. All these things I've talked about, probably a lot more, he's well aware of them. He knows exactly what is and isn't possible and what can and can't happen and what the real balance of power is. And again, unless there's something that we don't know in public yet, I can't even imagine anything that President Trump was going to be able to bring to bear on that phone call that's going to cause Russia to change from the position it is nonstop, consistently held since April of 2022. We're going to have to wait and see. When we do, then we'll make a new assessment there. But most likely, this is going to end like the Anchorage did, where Trump has all these high expectations and hopes, but there's no foundation, there's no fundamentals behind it. And with the Russians saying that, I can take anything you can give, whether economic or a handful of missiles, it's not going to change the dynamic on the ground. So there's no reason why they should. But Putin still, he's talking about, that Trump mentioned in there, he's talking about after the war, he's talking about trade. Putin wants to have a strategic arms limitation treaty for the one that's about to expire in February, not long from now. So Putin does want to have a deal. He does want to have long-term relations with the United States because he knows that's in his interest, and he knows it's in global security interest. So there is room for things, but I cannot imagine that Putin is going to not require what he needs domestically to succeed. Because just imagine for a moment the domestic audience in Russia, who also is really well aware of these things. If they see their government and their leader, Vladimir Putin, say, okay, from a position of power with the capability to cause a lot more trouble and a lot more death and destruction on the Ukraine side than they have done so far, he then capitulates to the personality of Trump and agrees to end not on their maximalist terms, but significantly allowing Ukraine to exist in some form, to allow Zelensky to stay in power. No demilitarization, no denazification, as the Russians might define it. He would not survive in office. You want to talk about the potential for the people rising up against it? It's not because of economic hardship. It would be because he gave the farm away when he had the power to demand full compliance. See, and you talk about somebody, what Putin is focused on, like every other leader, he's really focused on his domestic more so than the international. And I just cannot even imagine a scenario that anything we would bring to bear would be able to change that. We'll have to wait and see. Who knows? Maybe there's something we don't know that could change this. If the war is over, then, you know, I'm going to be the first one to cheer, even if it's not what I thought, because that's the ultimate objective, because then that gets the risk of escalation and the development of a West on East war that could go nuclear off the table, or at least significantly diminish it. But we'll have to wait and see what it happens. We'll see what the Russian readout of this is when it comes out. We'll also see what happens next week when these high-level delegations get together.